So if you think the internet has a long memory, consider how long a country's memories can last. And take a national trauma like 9/11 or Gettysburg, the collective memory can haunt generations. National memories can also spark cycles of violence. Think of how the Serbs targeted Bosnian Muslims in the 1990s. So a common response to genocide is the vow to remember, right? Never forget. But journalist David Reif has come to believe the opposite, that sometimes the best way to deal with historical trauma is to forget. Steve Paulson recently caught up with Reif to talk about his new book, In Praise of Forgetting.
David, there's a famous line from George Santayana that we hear over and over. Those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it. Do you think he was wrong?
Well, I've written a whole book on the premise that he's wrong, so I hope he's wrong. Look, I think that is the dumbest thing, to be candid, ever said by an extremely intelligent person, and Santayana was a brilliant, brilliant man. First of all, there's absolutely no empirical basis for such a claim. It is, to put it charitably, wishful thinking. The murder of European Jewry and of much of the Roma population of Europe by the Germans in the 1940s did not stop what happened in East Pakistan and what became Bangladesh in 71, didn't stop what happened in Cambodia, didn't stop the Rwandan genocide, et cetera, et cetera. So already you're on pretty shaky ground just to claim that we learn things from the past. And nobody in Rwanda, I was actually a correspondent in Rwanda in 94, nobody in Rwanda said, oh, well, oops, the Germans did that terrible thing, so we won't do the terrible thing we have in mind.
So the whole idea of, I mean, the mantra that's repeated about genocide is never again. And you're saying people don't think about preventing genocide as a principle. It's, you've got to look at it country by country, sort of the specific circumstances.
Well, first of all, mass murder historically, alas, almost always is the product of fear. Fear of the other, fear of a population seen as somehow being existentially dangerous. The Germans, for example, the Nazis, referred to the Jews as a bacillus, in other words, as a kind of plague. If you're afraid you're going to be infected by the plague, you try to stamp it out. I once wrote rather bitterly in a book I did many, many years ago about the Bosnian War that actually the phrase never again, you know, if it could be taken seriously at all, simply meant never again would Germans kill Jews in Europe in the 1940s.
And you were a reporter during that war in the 1990s. And I'm guessing that your experience there had a lot to do with writing this book. I mean, sort of this whole question of how memory can actually be used to lead to war rather than peace.
Well, this is the other side of what I'm trying to address and trying to argue exactly. I was a correspondent in Bosnia. I was again in Kosovo, although that was for a much smaller amount of time. I was in Sarajevo during much of the siege between 92 and 95. And I saw the ways in which memory can be not a goad to forgiveness or reconciliation, which is the kind of official view, the view of the mainstream human rights community of the UN, frankly, of most decent people. Memory was completely instrumentalized in the Balkan Wars. I tell a story in the book of being in Belgrade, Serbian capital, in 1993, interviewing a nationalist politician, another extreme guy. And when I was leaving the interview, which had gone perfectly well, one of his aides gave me a folded up piece of paper. When I opened it, said 1453, which, you know, is the date that Constantinople fell to the Turks. You know, the message was clear. The message was, we Serbs are resisting a new Turkic, Ottoman, whatever, Seljuk onslaught, and we are...
And they're calling up memory, or not memories, but they're calling up this episode in history that happened more than four centuries ago.
Exactly. And they're not only calling it up, they are using it to glorify their own struggle and demonize their enemies. So I guess my view is actually sometimes it's better to remember. But I am saying that forgetting should be an option. And sometimes it's a better option.
And you're saying forgetting about particular atrocities that happened. Because, I mean, if there is this relentless quest to bring justice to things that happened maybe decades ago, that can just lead to more demand for retribution.
Yeah, I mean, if you're talking about remembrance, you're actually not talking about the past as it really was. You're talking about the past as the present chooses to reinterpret it. And we know historically that the past has been reinterpreted over and over again. There's no such thing as collective memory, after all. There's only individual memory. Memory is always a distortion of history. Memory is neither real memory, nor is it real history. It's a combination of myth and politics.
Well, I'm wondering if a better model in terms of how to handle past abuses, past atrocities, is something more along the lines of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission in South Africa, you know, once Nelson Mandela became president. I mean, so you're both investigating truth, but there's also a reconciliation component there. You're not just going to try to string up the people who had abused you.
But that's so interesting, that case. So, you know, if you go to a rally, many different kinds of sort of militant activist rallies, you'll hear no justice, no peace. Well, if you mean, as in fact they do mean, that you can't have peace without justice, well, that's false. That just isn't true. I can give you five examples of peace without justice. And the Truth and Reconciliation Commission in South Africa is a very interesting example of that, which is, by the way, why it was criticized by a lot of activists in South Africa. Because you could go, if you were a member of the former apartheid regime and you'd committed various crimes, you could go and testify, tell the truth, that is, give a kind of consolation to the victims, and also set the historical record straight. And this included assassins and people who put bombs in schools and all kinds of really vile people. But if you told the truth, you were in effect pardoned immediately. You know, you could testify in the afternoon and quite literally be home in time for supper with no further consequences to you. Now, that's peace, that's truth, but that's not justice, which already suggests that actually these things don't necessarily go together. In fact, they can even contradict each other.
So do you think that was the right thing for South Africa to do?
I do. But I'm always for peace, you see. I mean, if I have to choose between peace and justice, I'll take peace any day. Maybe that's what being a war correspondent for about 15 years of my one and only life taught me.
So you said there are other examples of countries or cultures that have chosen peace by forgetting. Tell me about one or two others.
Well, the Balkans is an obvious example. There's not going to be another war in the former Yugoslavia. It's a very unjust peace. In my view, the Bosnian government was the legitimate side, and to a very considerable extent, they lost. But there is a peace. People aren't being blown up every day. I mean, I think you can go around the world and in so many cases see peace deals that never gave people what they wanted. I think part of the illusion here is that we have in our heads the model in which we fight the bad guys and then they surrender unconditionally, sort of on the model of World War I and World War II. Once the Germans had surrendered, we could impose basically whatever memories we wanted through school books, through appointing leaders during the occupation of Germany. But most wars don't end that way. Most wars either end in slaughter of one side or in a negotiated peace in which nobody gets what they want. I mean, the deal in Northern Ireland didn't join Northern Ireland to the Republic of Ireland, which was what the Republicans wanted. And it certainly gave the Republicans more power, which was not what the Unionists, the Loyalists, wanted. But it was a kind of deal. And I'm afraid we're going to have to get used to that. I think this notion that remembering is always going to lead to a better result just doesn't take into account the realities of war and peace as they exist in our world and have existed in the past and are likely to exist in the future.
That's David Reif talking with Steve Paulson about his book, In Praise of Forgetting. historical memory and its ironies.